Welcome back, one and all, to another day, another episode here of The Damage Report. I'm John Arola, and on Tuesdays, you don't have any clue who's gonna be joining me, but this time, you're in luck. Generally not, it's a real crapshoot. But today, returning to the show once, I'm totally joking, don't at anyone. Today, joining us, Yasmin Aliyah Khan. Welcome back to the show.
What an intro. That was such a crazy, and I don't know how to feel about it, but I'm happy to be here on a Tuesday with you, John.
Well, there are two ways that you can introduce someone. You can big them up, or you can undercut literally everyone else. And I like to mix it up. So this time I'm cutting people at the knees. But no, I'm kidding. We obviously love all our co-hosts. I feel better about it now.
Thank you.
No, it's great to have you back on. Because we got a lot of news to talk about. I'm gonna keep it real. I don't know exactly how today's show is gonna go because at any given moment, big breaking news could come. I like to deliver for the audience. And so I was making some calls and trying to get them to push up the arrest, but we pretty much spoil all of our political capital on Big News Wednesdays. I can't do it on a Tuesday, but fingers crossed that the arrest happens. We'll be talking about
it. Not holding my breath for anything to happen today, but we will see. Maybe I'm wrong. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe the protests are gonna take off or something. Like, I don't know, but we haven't seen it yet.
We haven't, but regardless of that, even if nothing develops during the show, we've got a lot of fun stuff to talk about. A little bit of domestic news. The brewing war between DeSantis and Trump has entered a particularly dirty and vicious cycle, and I hate to see that happen. I don't like American political discourse descending to those muddy depths. But Fox is facing a new lawsuit. We're gonna give you details on that. Maybe my favorite story of the day is the Texas Tribune has completed their investigation into the police response to the Uvalde mass shooting. And what they revealed about why they held back for so long is so incredibly damning, not just to the response, but to like the national discussion around gun control. And we're gonna talk about why that is. We're gonna talk a little bit about self-driving technology, why it's so much worse than it used to be, and a whole lot more besides. We got some fun coming up in the aftermath as well. Donald Trump, noted lover of the Bible, whiffing once again to just say a thing about the Bible, anything, one thing, a fact, an opinion. That'll be fun. And we're gonna give you some more details on the IPCC climate report that dropped at the beginning of this week. But all of that said, everyone, please hit the like button, share the stream so that people know we're live and they can join in the conversation. And if you wanna send us any comments, tweets, or super chats, you might get your comment read on the air. And if it's particularly good, maybe you get a Blue Apron gift card. Cause I remembered this morning that we're doing that. Forgot yesterday, sorry. But anyway, so please hit the like button in advance of that. With all that said though, Yasmin, are you ready to talk some news?
I'm ready, we got a lot to talk about.
We do. In fact, let's jump right in with this.
Yeah, when you see Donald Trump on Saturday try to announce his own arrest, what do you see him doing there?
This is really panic and fear. He knows what's coming on Tuesday, Wednesday, whatever. He knows what's coming down the pike. And what he's trying to do is he's trying to get the advanced jump onto the story.
Okay, so it took a little bit of time for Michael Cohen to really respond to some of Donald Trump's tweets, the calls for protests and all that came earlier. And while I don't agree on plenty of things with Michael Cohen, I do agree that that is entirely the strategy that Trump was advancing. Now, we're a couple of days past that, and so we can take stock of how it has actually developed. And interestingly, seems like crickets kind of. And what's weirdest about that isn't just that Donald Trump, who is, you know, this huge political figure on the right, who has been able to get violent mobs in the streets before, is having difficulty in doing that once again. And in, you know, this historic time of potentially a former president being arrested, it's that he's unable to do that at a time in which over the past couple of weeks, he has been shooting up in the polling against Ron DeSantis. Like, he is arguably more popular than he has been on the right in some time. And even so, it hasn't manifested outside of, you know, the courthouse and all that, where it's expected that maybe the arrest will happen maybe while we're live right here. Reporters were saying there were more reporters there than actual protesters. And sure, it's New York, this isn't Mar-a-Lago or anything, but there's gotta be some Trump fans, Yasmin, wouldn't you think?
where are they? I haven't seen them, you know? And from what I've seen of the reporters who are in New York and Washington, D.C., like, there's not a whole lot going on. And you know what, though? You know what I was thinking about? With January 6th, they had a long time to plan their insurrection and whatever it was at the riot, their tour visit, you know? They had a lot of time to plan that. They only were given a couple of days notice here, so they didn't have all the time to organize and get everything set up the way that they wanted to. But I will say, I do love when Michael Cohen weighs in on Mr. Trump. It's my favorite. He so clearly can't stand the guy, but he also usually has some interesting insights into Trump's character and his general modus operandi, which is always so baffling to like normal people. So yeah. He's always a good time for me.
Yeah. Yeah, that's always funny. I mean, like, he can't help but talk in a way that it really does feel like a mob situation.
He sounds like a mobster, which is just like, it's very entertaining. I like
it. Which is kind of cool, I guess. But anyway, I just want to say one other thing about—
Don't be a hater, John. It is cool. It is cool.
I'm not being a hater. Anyway, I have one other thing I want to say about the Trump thing, though, because you know we've been following his messaging around this for the past few days. And I'm not going to say that he's been rational the last 48 hours. We're going to get into some of the comments he's made in just a few. But when it comes to calling for violent protests, he has backed off, right? I mean, he sent out those initial messages. There was a negative reaction, I think, from most sane people in response to that. And I don't feel like he's really continued it. I mean, if those messages were like a panic thing because of his fear of the impending arrest, well, he's much closer to that arrest now than he was. So wouldn't he be more panicked? And yet there have not been new calls unless, I don't know, maybe I can load Truth Social right now. Maybe he's typing it as we speak. It feels like he's at least backed off of that a little bit, which maybe speaks to his team being a little bit savvier than they would have been in previous years. I mean, they can't necessarily stop his knee-jerk reaction, but it looks like they've sort of taken hold of him since the weekend. And you know, when the stakes are potentially, you know, destruction of property or people being killed, I'm glad to see that he hasn't been renewing those calls for people in the streets. If the arrest happens, then we'll see. Maybe they'll come at that point. If he's ever locked up, and I don't anticipate that that will happen, God only knows what he'll be communicating to people at that point, Yasmin.
Yeah, I mean, you do have a good point. I always think it's interesting, though, how his team really doesn't seem to have a whole lot of control over the things that he tweets and the things that he just says. Even when he's giving a speech and he has a speech written for him, they're in front of him, but he still loves to go off the books. We know that Trump loves to go off the books. So, I mean, if his team is responsible for him backing off, then more power to him. Good job. They finally figured out how to do that years after he's already out of office.
Yeah, unfortunately, they weren't able to figure it out before the first coup.
Yeah, I'm better late than never, I guess.
Yeah. Now, I want to turn to a little bit of the substance of what's being debated here. And yeah, I'm going to preface the video that I'm going to play in my reaction by saying, look, there's a lot of separate investigations that are moving forward when it comes to Trump. And I'm personally of the position, and I know that this is a radical position to hold, that even if you're powerful, if you commit a crime, even if it's not one we consider major, you should probably suffer the same consequences that anyone else would. Again, radical position. And we could debate, is this the one we would want an impending arrest to come for? And in fact, I say that sort of rhetorically. Let's very briefly, because I haven't gotten Yasmin's opinion on this. Is this the one that you'd like to see? Like, if he does get fingerprinted and indicted and all that, this is the one, not, you know, the impending rape case, not the Georgia, the Fulton County investigation, not the classified documents investigation. A lot of people are saying, oh, there's all this concern about them blowing it and then ruining all the other investigations. What do you think about that big meta conversation?
It is a huge conversation. I mean, this whole scenario is very precedent setting, right? We've never really been in a situation like this, at least not in recent history in the United States of America, where we have a former president who has all these indictments and pending charges against him, right? And he's likely to be found guilty in a lot, if not all of these cases, right? I would love to see some kind of repercussions, specifically for the Georgia case. The fact that he tried blatantly to overturn and throw out those votes in a nationwide election, I think that's a huge deal. And I can't believe that more hasn't already been done about it. But I do like and respect the fact that they are doing their due diligence because it is such a big, important case. And, you know, to the other point, it is a little delicate, right? You do have to be delicate because whenever you're dealing with the presidency, it is very easy to retroactively go back and look at every single president and say, this was illegal. You shouldn't have done this, blah, blah, blah. Everybody is talking right now about George W. Bush because we're coming up on the 20-year anniversary of the war in Iraq and all of the illegalities of that war and the fact that all of those repercussions are, we're still experiencing them today. So they do have to be delicate with it. I respect that. And I hope to see that they are successful in their endeavors and that none of this really gets blown, you know, maybe not even more out of proportion than it needs to. It has to be handled effectively. And I think that they're doing that. It seems like they are.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see. I agree with you. That's the one that, like, if we had to choose, and again, I don't know why we would have to, that's the one that I consider to be most concerning, even more so than some of them are easier to prove, I think, like the classified documents. I don't know how much more clear what happened there could be. But yeah, trying to overturn the results of an election at the state level, I think would be the one I would want to look forward to.
This was personal money. This wasn't trying to hide. This was 7 years ago, statute of limitation. And I think in your heart of hearts, you know too, that you think this is just political. And I think that's what the rest of the country thinks. And we're kind of tired of that.
Yeah, I'm tired of the illegality more so than the investigations. But sure, I'm tired of the whole thing. I would love to move on from this. Kevin McCarthy, you are one of the people stopping us from being able to do this because you keep defending Donald Trump as you are in that clip. There, he was only talking for maybe 10 seconds, but he made like four separate claims. All of them are nonsense. So really fast, he says it's personal money. Okay, does that make it better? You realize that spending personal money can be a violation of campaign finance laws. I don't even understand what point he thinks he's making there. There was no attempt to hide it. Is one of the most blatant falsehoods that I've ever heard a person in politics literally say. There's no attempt to hide it. No attempt. None at all. Michael Cohen took out a home equity loan to pay off another man's affair hush money. And then months later, Donald Trump began a series of like subpayments to conceal the total amount that is being transferred to his political goon. There was no attempt to hide it. I feel like that's kind of an attempt to hide it at that point, having someone else pay for it. The fact that it's against the statute of limitations, I will leave that up to the jury or the judge to figure out. Again, that might be enough, you know, good cause to not be able to get him on this. But the fact that it wouldn't bother you because it's outside of the statute of limitations, it was just a few years ago. If it was a violation of campaign finance laws, and it was Biden, I have a feeling you would still experience a little bit of, even if delayed, moral outrage. But he's ready to move on. Then saying it's just political. Well, is it political? Well, it's about a politician. And we are in a time of politicians committing a lot of really obvious corrupt acts. And I am sick of the corruption. But you cannot simply say people are sick of these investigations as you then put down the mic and go back to chairing, I don't even know how many investigations of Joe Biden and his family and everything they've ever done. So there's a little bit of inconsistency there, Yasmin. What do you think about the arguments?
Well, you mentioned the investigations into Joe Biden and his family. Even Geraldo Rivera on Fox News is like, enough with the Hunter Biden stuff. It's not a thing, you know, and the politicization of this, or the alleged politicization, I'll say, right? It's kind of a moot point because this isn't the Democrats prosecuting Donald Trump, right? This is happening in the Manhattan DA's office. This is happening in the state of Georgia. This is not the Democrats. They're not involved. And the Republicans aren't involved either, right? So all of their claims about they don't have the evidence, blah, 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 they don't know. They weren't there in the courtroom. They don't have access to those things. They weren't listening to the trial. They didn't hear any of that. A lot of it hasn't been made public yet. So they're speaking about things that they don't really understand and they shouldn't. What they're doing right now is just trying to keep their base, right? And they want to also keep their base ignorant to a lot of things. So if they say things like some of the things that you just mentioned, like it's outside of the statute of limitations, they made no efforts to hide this information. They can say those things in an effort to trick their base because their base is just going to hear that and say, yeah, well, I guess he didn't make any efforts. Even though Michael Cohen literally served time in jail for this. Yeah. It's like, how do you forget about that?
It is very convenient to forget that. So the idea, like, does it make sense for him to serve time for it? Probably. I mean, I feel like he knew that he was evading the law, and it was every bit of this was obviously done to impact an election. They were hiding extremely damaging personal information about a candidate, using money that has a campaign purpose to make it so that people don't find out about this. And again, add this to the pile of things that isn't it weird that no Trump voter cares that they tried to hide this from him? That they had so little respect for his potential voters that they tried to make sure that they never found out about this scandal? The sort of scandal where if it was about any other politician, obviously they would have a major problem with it. But I agree with you, Yasmin. This is not the Democrats going after them. This is a particular DA. And you could say that he's wrong. You could say that he's biased. But if you're saying that at the same time that the House Republicans are literally in a partisan fashion investigating all of this nonsense and also calling for Biden to be impeached and all of them to be locked up, then there's a little bit of inconsistency there. You could say, like, there would be a little bit of moral grounding to their arguments if they were to say something like, you know what? It deeply bothers me that Donald Trump engaged in this sort of affair, that he tried to hide it from the American people. I feel like people have the right to know, you know, what is going on with their politicians, but it kind of seems like this novel legal thing is probably not gonna get him. So it's personally distressing, but probably not legally. But they don't do any of that. They wanna have it all. They want to experience every bit of it. They don't think that he should be investigated for this stuff. And also, they will never, ever, for a microsecond, engage intellectually with what it means that he did all of this stuff that he did. And if they would at least pretend to care about it, then there would be much less obvious hypocrisy when it comes to their never-ending quest to get Hunter Biden over his laptop or whatever. But they don't do that. Anyway, it is not just Kevin McCarthy, though. And by the way, I don't know what's going to end up happening with the investigators because they're now being investigated, as we'll get to. Jim Jordan is trying to say the entire thing is just a bookkeeping error. Again, I dare you to engage with the substance of what the bookkeeping error was over, Jim Jordan. But no, Jim Jordan is probably not going to do that. He has, after all, made a decades-long career of looking the other way. Anyway, he is trying to drag the investigators in to testify before Congress, saying Alvin Bragg now needs to talk to their committees. And I'll remind you again, there's a lot of the word unprecedented is being thrown around a lot. This is a state level investigation. Why is Congress getting directly involved in this and questioning an ongoing legal process? This isn't questioning like the sentencing. We're not done with this. This is an ongoing process in a state level investigation. Why are they so involved in this? Anyway, and Rand Paul is saying the DA should be put in jail. So again, it is unacceptable to investigate your political opponents. And if you do it and show yourself to be my political opponent, you should be locked up for it. Little bit of inconsistency there, Yasmin. What do you think?
Rand Paul, I always get annoyed whenever I have to like comment on him. So I'm just not going to. But like the Republicans, they keep trying to press this narrative that all of these potential indictments against Trump are politically motivated, right? They're attacking the Manhattan DA. They're claiming that it was the Democrats who were doing this, even though none of this is taking place in a congressional setting. Jim Jordan's recent defense that it was a bookkeeping error, it's now, it's just like too little too late. So I don't really know what he's hoping to accomplish with this, apart from furthering the narrative that they already are so embedded in, right? They seem convinced that by making Trump a victim in all of this, he's essentially martyring himself for the cause. Even Marjorie Taylor Greene, she said that a criminal indictment would only strengthen the Trump base more because I don't know, I guess they love criminals. And Jim Jordan, like his point doesn't make any sense either. Like if the case was never, dropped in the Manhattan DA's, he said something about it being dropped and then it was picked up whenever Trump announced his presidential run, but that isn't what happened. Cy Vance passed it down to Alvin Bragg when Bragg took over the office.
Yeah, but see, you say passed it down. I can change that to passed on it. And that's only a few letters different. So it's almost true.
Yeah, like he didn't seek re-election. And so he was replaced in office. And then he said, here's all the stuff I've been working on. That's what happened. But
exactly. Yeah. And that gets manipulated into again. And again, I'm not saying they're gonna get him. I understand that it would be super easy and probably some people would have an appetite for just constantly saying like, oh no, everything's gonna work out and all of the bad people are gonna go to jail. I'm not covering this because I think that's necessarily gonna happen in this case or in any other case, but it is happening. It is unprecedented for us to be in this position where a major candidate for office has committed so many obvious crimes. And so we need to discuss it.
And look, I don't know what goes into paying hush money to a porn star to secure silence over some type of alleged affair. I can't speak to that.
I can't speak to that, but I am gonna speak about that just a little bit to give you a few chuckles at Donald Trump's expense. So that was Ron DeSantis. And look, he could have slammed Trump a lot more. Maybe he will in the near future. And he did decline to get involved if they were to try to like go to Mar-a-Lago and haul Donald Trump out. He says he's not gonna get involved, which is also notably not a defense for Donald Trump. And so we speculated on yesterday's show that that is going to lead to a nuclear response from Donald Trump. And we've already seen this on today's pre-port. I showed Don Jr. attacking Ron DeSantis in an increasingly nasally high-pitched voice. But now we have Donald Trump. And here's what he has to say about the governor of Florida. Ron DeSanctimonious will probably find out about false accusations and fake stories sometime in the future as he gets older, wiser, and better known when he's unfairly and illegally attacked by a woman, even classmates that are underage. Or possibly a man. I'm sure he will want to fight these misfits just like I do. And he included a screenshot of a tweet from Midas Touch showing that photo of Ron DeSantis famously partying with students when he was much younger. And look, there's been reporting on that already. We covered it at the time. He does seem to have been kind of inappropriate, but so far as I've seen, there's been no accusations of affairs with students. But what you have right there, to be very clear, is a multi-pronged smear job against Ron DeSantis. Not only saying that he's gonna face these accusations, which could be read as a threat, but that they will come in the form of women making false accusations and possibly men too. And also there is no, I guess, more taboo area for attacks on the right now than claiming that someone is a groomer. And that is clearly what Donald Trump is doing once again, Yasmin. So what do you think about this? Was this a bad call for Ron DeSantis to get involved at all?
I mean, he really doesn't need to get involved at all because the story is going to play out how it's going to play out regardless. And if it goes the way a lot of us think it will, it's gonna work out pretty well for Ron DeSantis. But it is so funny to me how Trump keeps bringing up this picture of Ron DeSantis with underage girls as if he's never engaged in any kind of sexual misconduct himself, right? And I mean, it is an actual story that was covered. I think it was in the New York Times. I covered it on The Breakdown even. And you're right, it probably should be a bigger story than it is. But if the Trump base is floundering between Trump and DeSantis now, I don't think they'll care about this picture. They didn't care about a lot of similar stories. So I don't think this picture will be the deciding factor between Trump and DeSantis for that particular MAGA base. But yeah. John, maybe Trump was just being very woke in that tweet by not assuming Ron DeSantis' sexuality. You know, maybe he's just being very open-minded. Maybe he's learning, yeah. Maybe he's growing.
Yeah, I think, you know, and it's very inspirational to see a guy at this advanced age still willing to question what he believes and knows. No, mm-hmm. I don't think that's what it is. Mm-hmm. I think
You don't think that's what it is?
I think that we have already gotten to the point where we all suspected deep in our gut we were gonna get to, he's just calling Ron DeSantis gay.
He is.
That's what it is. It's nothing more lofty or philosophical or ideological than that. He's pointing at Ron DeSantis and saying,
I'm trying to give him the benefit of the doubt and assume, you know, people can grow, John. You know, maybe that's what's happening. But, you know, but seriously, you know, the fact that DeSantis being gay can potentially destroy his political career is obviously bigoted and dumb, but it would expose the fact, you know, that the party stands for very hypocritical things as far as their stance against the LGBTQ community. Yeah. So it's almost like they're being self-aware in the fact that they know that this would hurt their base. Yeah. Or their entire political party, rather.
Yeah, I mean, look, I obviously we don't want this sort of blatant homophobia to have any effect in elections. We could also comment at the same time and say, well, Ron DeSantis certainly has been stoking as much homophobia as anyone else in right-wing politics in recent years. It's also absurd so far as we know. Ron DeSantis is married, has been married for a long time. He has kids. And I know all of this because I'm never going to be able to forget that weird cuck political ad that he made years ago. He seems to be a straight man. And as Yasmin pointed out, like, man, you know, like people in glass houses aren't supposed to throw stones and all that. Donald Trump loves throwing stones that have been genetically engineered to pierce his own glass. Not only is he a guy who is known to have had affairs and all that, he has made any number of bizarre comments specifically about extremely young women. He made a comment on video once about this like 10-year-old girl is like, I'm gonna be dating you in a decade, which is probably optimistic, but also why is that a thing that you're thinking about at all? It also brings to mind something that I have a feeling Ron DeSantis is probably immune from, which is like accusations of making weird sexualizing comments about your own daughter, which Donald Trump has done multiple times enthusiastically on multiple TV shows. So I don't know, maybe it's just you throw enough mud and it just sort of cancels out, or maybe like you said, I don't think that this attack is going to make a difference. And I agree that I don't think the substance of the attack will make a difference, but that doesn't mean that the attack or the attacks won't make a difference. Because again, I do think that this is primate behavior. I think that they bow down to the gorilla that throws the biggest lump of poo. And I don't think the content of the poo necessarily matters, what food went into its production, but they want to see someone being aggressive. And Donald Trump does that better on the right than anyone else.
Yeah, and that's a good point, and I like your analogy. But I think what something that Trump does very well is that he just keeps repeating things over and over and over again, so that it's lodged in people's brains. So even though this DeSantis picture hasn't had the impact that he seems to want it to have on his base, if he keeps saying it enough times, eventually it might, you know, eventually it might actually damage DeSantis and whatever image and brand he's trying to build leading up to whatever election he's about to be running in. So we'll see. And I mean, he has used this tactic before to great success, unfortunately.
Yeah, we'll see. By the way, that tweet that we showed you, or the bleat of Donald Trump, he had had an earlier one. We'll show you just briefly. Nikki McCann Ramirez, friend of the show, had tweeted this out. It was sort of a simpler, more stripped down attack. It was accusing him of potentially having had an affair with a woman and a man, but he decided to add on the groomer angle later. And by the way, this is not just a random attack. I mean, it is very much a random attack, but according to Rolling Stone, Trump has spent months privately soliciting and regurgitating various bits of salacious gossip about DeSantis, including unverified allegations about his private life. At the time, this is from a couple months ago, Rolling Stone declined to publish where the president had been spreading these things. But one of the uncorroborated or baseless rumors that Trump was gossiping about was, in fact, about DeSantis supposedly being gay, according to two people familiar with the comments. Again, this should not even be a thing that you can attack someone over, and it appears to be utter nonsense. I have no idea where he's getting it from, but this is probably going to be a recurring thing. Like, why not for the, you know, the super broken version of masculinity, or what passes for masculinity on the right, claiming that someone's gay is probably going to be effective. So Ron DeSantis should buckle up. Oh, by the way, he's also doing really bad. If we go to this last graphic, he's trailing Trump now by 28 points in recent polls. And this is while Trump is at risk of potentially being locked up. It's just pathetic. Anyway, I don't think that we have time for the ban, and maybe we can bring it back tomorrow. We got to move on to other news, because Donald Trump is not the only one facing legal action. Why don't we jump into this? Fox News is, of course, still in the process of their Dominion lawsuit back and forth. They're facing billions of dollars potentially in fines there, but that's not the only lawsuit they're facing. One of their producers has launched a lawsuit. This is Abby Grossberg, who has accused Fox lawyers of behavior actually tied in with that other lawsuit. She says that they coerced her into giving misleading testimony in their ongoing legal battle over these unfounded big lie conspiracy theories. Grossberg said that Fox lawyers had tried to position her and Maria Bartiromo to take the blame for Fox's repeated airing of conspiracy theories after Dominion voting systems and its supposed role in manipulating the results of the election, which I sort of get the strategy, at least when it comes to Bartiromo. She did willingly have a lot of those conspiracy theorists on her show. I don't know about Abby Grossberg's culpability. But in her complaints, she accuses lawyers for Fox News of coaching her in a coercive and intimidating manner before her deposition last September, the Dominion case. The lawyer, she said, gave her the impression that she had to avoid mentioning prominent male executives and on-air talent to protect them from any blame while putting her own reputation at risk. And it is super interesting. Like, I totally am not surprised by them trying to protect the on-air talent. But why specifically are they trying to protect the male executives? This isn't like the O'Reilly thing. This isn't, you know, an Ailes thing. This is not anything about sexual, you know, misconduct or anything. This is about election conspiracy theories, Yasmin. I don't know why there'd be the focus on the male thing, but that is Fox News. They apparently were willing to throw one producer, one host, two women under the bus to protect the guys at the top.
Yeah, well, the reason why is detailed in the allegation that there's a culture at Fox News of, what is it, rampant misogyny and discrimination, right? And so I think that's enough of a reason as to why they're so keen to protect these male executives who aren't really directly involved in this scandal, or you know, maybe they are. But these allegations are shocking, and at the same time, they're not really that surprising. And I think you kind of know what misogyny looks and feels like, especially as a woman, you understand that, right? But when you get specific examples like the ones that were detailed in this case, it still kind of takes you back. These specific examples, they matter though, because without them, people will continue to just downplay the experiences of others to no end and just act like that's not a real thing, you're making it up. They'll just gaslight you, basically. And we already know what the critics of this case are gonna say before anyone has ever even seen or heard any evidence that no one can force you to do anything. No one can make you say something you don't wanna say, that you're responsible for the words that come out of your own mouth under oath. And they're gonna act like coercion and blackmail aren't real, and that they're irrelevant when discussing legal proceedings. But we know that that isn't the case.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, this whole thing, maybe it's because I've been rewatching season 3 of Succession in anticipation of the new season. It has such strong Succession. Like, I feel like Abby Grossberg is very much the Tom, or maybe the Greg. Maybe Bartiromo is the Tom that they're trying to throw under the bus. And of course they're gonna do that. And when they do that, of course they're gonna choose women for it. She said, that's what the culture is there. They don't respect or value women. And honestly, if this is like revelatory to you, welcome to American politics, or congrats for getting out of your coma, because that has been so obvious for so long. Of course they don't. You referenced some of the specific allegations. We're just gonna quickly run through a few of them. Fox superiors apparently called Ms. Bartiromo a crazy bitch who was menopausal, asked Ms. Grossberg to cut the host out of coverage discussions. So I guess she can still be the host, but she doesn't get to choose what they cover at that point. They said that Nancy Pelosi was pictured in huge pictures in a plunging swimsuit in Tucker Carlson's office. She was apparently a senior booking producer for Tucker Carlson. The next day after she realized that, Justin Wells, top producer for Carlson, called Ms. Grossberg into his office to ask whether Mrs. Bartiromo was having a sexual relationship with Kevin McCarthy. They joked about Jewish people and freely deployed a vulgar term for women that was eventually clarified. Yes, it does start with a C, and see you next to, you get where we're going with that. That's what they were just, that's the culture in their office. You throw that around. They debated which of two female gubernatorial candidates were more effable. And look, it says a lot about the men in these offices that they feel perfectly willing having these conversations in front of literally everyone else. But it says everything about the management too. These employees know that Tucker's not gonna care about this. The management isn't gonna be mad at them for this. This is the culture that Tucker Carlson and Fox News has allowed to fester.
Yeah, and it's interesting that even when they're actively defending themselves against defamation in a lawsuit of unheard of scale and national importance, they still can't act right. You know, it really is something that's so ingrained in the culture that I don't really know at this point how you stamp something like that out. And this is kind of what happens whenever you have a culture, whenever you have even a president, right? Whenever Trump was elected president, whenever he was running for his first election back in 2015, and he was saying all these terrible things about all these different minority groups, including women, we said this is going to be a problem. This is going to create a culture where saying these types of things is going to be okay. People are going to think that they're okay, and it's going to penetrate the culture. It's going to set the whole culture back, right? It's going to set all of us back decades, if not centuries, right?
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happened, and that's exactly what we're seeing embodied here at Fox News.
Yeah. And look, they're now counter-suing. They're saying, here's their statement. Fox News Media engaged an independent outside counsel to immediately investigate the concerns raised by Mrs. Grossberg. Oh yeah, they're taking it super seriously. Which were made following a critical performance review. We will vigorously defend these claims. So she's just mad because she got a bad review, which is the sort of claim you make because it's plausible. You could have someone who's just striking back against their employer after a bad review. But it's also like so easy to accept. And that does not make it true. But every bit of this feels like something that could be true. So again, don't jump to any conclusions. We'll be following along as it happens. We're gonna add this to the ever-growing pile of investigations that are ongoing and lawsuits, especially just regarding Fox News. But serious claims, and I share your concern, Yaz. I don't know how you fix this. This is years and years and years after like the rampant sexual harassment and sexual assault going in Fox. And is this progress? I mean, I guess there's maybe less assault, but it still seems incredibly toxic. The Texas Tribune has released the results of an investigation into the absolutely horrendous response to the Uvalde mass shooting. And they specifically focused on why did it take so long for the police to make a move? Why did they wait for that SWAT team, which was 60 miles away, to arrive before they moved in? And what they have found is not surprising, but they found a lot of evidence for it. They were terrified of the gun. The guy had an AR-15 and they didn't want to go up against it. It's what we suspected, but they could not be clearer that was what it was. Sergeant Daniel Coronado of the Uvalde Police Department is on recording from the actual incident saying, I have a male subject with an AR. Another officer says, F, just out loud, is shocked and horrified at the prospect of going up against this gun. Another just says AR, like that's the code. We do not want to go up against an AR. Donald Page goes on to say, there was no way of going in. We had no choice but to wait and try to get something that had better coverage where we could actually stand up to him. So bear in mind, some of this is coming from body cam footage and analysis of that. Some is coming from investigations and interviews that came right after the shooting. Some of it is a little bit more delayed. All of these police officers were apparently reached out to by the Texas Tribune and none agreed to participate in their investigation. But we want to give you some more of the results of it. Detective Luis Landry says, we weren't equipped to make entry to that room without several casualties. Once we found out it was a rifle he was using, it was a different game plan we would have to come up with. It wasn't just going in guns blazing the old West style and take him out. Chief Arredondo, you remember him, he says, we're gonna get scrutinized for why we didn't go in there. I know the firepower he had based on what shells I saw, the holes in the wall in the room next to his. The preservation of life, everything around the gunman was a priority. Well, the preservation of some people's lives, the preservation of the lives that could be lost trying to rush this guy with a weapon of war, not necessarily the preservation of the lives around him in that room that were at risk if you didn't go in. And by the way, all of this, the point of this coverage, why I want to cover it, is they were clearly terrified. And I'm not doing this coverage to say, oh, look at them, look at these cowards. I think they should be terrified. I would be terrified. I have enough empathy that I can just make myself terrified thinking about what they were going up against. The point is that they were terrified. An entire group of police officers, some of whom, by the way, had ARs of their own, were so terrified at the prospect of going up against someone with this weapon that they couldn't imagine doing so until they had the SWAT team, which had better armor, because apparently this AR would just shred their body armor, better shields and those sorts of things. And that is the entire point. If you can routinely go out and just buy a weapon that will incapacitate, paralyze a police department, I don't know, maybe we ban that gun. Maybe you should not be able to spend $1,200 and nullify all of the law enforcement in a small town. But that is not the lesson that was learned from Uvalde. The cops, by the way, who are terrified of being shot with this gun are not a part of the solution of trying to get those guns off the street. That's its own issue. And I'm not saying that no cops are on our side on that, but that's incredibly frustrating. And so Yaz, I want your thoughts about this. It is so frustrating that this is such a clear example of why these guns cannot be available for civilian use. And yet we're months and months and months out of this, and nobody seems to have learned that lesson.
Yeah. So real quick, I just want to say, I do like the Texas Tribune as the publication. They get hit by a lot of people on the right for being maybe too leftist or too left leaning. But honestly, I think they actually do a decent job of covering stories accurately and with journalistic integrity. I'm not like sponsored by the Texas Tribune. I don't think, do I need to say that? But it just so happens that a lot of the facts and realities that they report on just aren't flattering to Texas Republicans and the people who tend to align with those beliefs. So when I first read this story, I think I read it sometime yesterday, I wanted to just roll my eyes and say, oh, that's typical. But I didn't really want to think about it much more beyond that, because who wants to think about the fact that these grown men in their chosen profession decided to let children face the weapon that they themselves were too cowardly to face, even though the children didn't have the additional body armor on that they had. And even though the children obviously didn't have weapons to protect themselves. And you know what's ironic about it is every single cop that I've ever spoken to personally about their job loves to tell me how dangerous it is for them. And I'm not trying to deny that, right? Obviously, it's a very dangerous profession. But if they're so utterly aware of how dangerous it is, and again, no one's making them be cops, right? They can choose another profession that's less dangerous if it's too much for them. But they knew what this job entailed when they took it, right? They knew the risks that they were taking. And every cop that I've ever spoken to who is so quick to talk about the dangers of the job also says that they do it because they want to serve and protect their communities. And I'm just not seeing that here. The children did not choose this life. They were just going to school. They were counting on these grown, armed and armored men to defend them. And those men just chose not to do their jobs.
Yeah. Yeah, and again, we can disagree on interpretations. Like I said, I'm not trying to get on the cops for being scared. I'm getting on our entire society for not learning anything from that fear. And by the way, I'm not saying that I never get on cops for being scared. The fact that they're perpetually afraid that literally anyone they pull over could shoot them leads to a lot of needless death. I'm saying in this particular case where there's already been a mass shooting, I understand it. It's up to the politicians, it's up to our populace to change the law so that we don't end up with more of these situations. Also, fact check, I'd referenced spending $1,200 to nullify an entire police force. I was wrong about that. I'm being told you can get them now for $400. Ridiculous. You should not be able to buy a weapon that nullifies an entire police force for less than an Xbox. And don't fact check me about how much an Xbox costs. I assume it's like $400. I don't care. An Xbox and a Switch, fine. In any event, here's the issue. Coming out of that shooting, the talk was not, oh my God, look what one can do with an AR. It was mental health this, but do nothing about it. It was, you know, a lost generation that, but do nothing about it. You had people like, I'm just gonna summarize with Senator Bob Hall, state senator, a Republican, who said, this man had enough time to do it with his hands or a baseball bat. And so it's not the gun, it's the person. Except that it was the gun. You didn't hear the cops routinely being recorded as saying, oh my God, he's got a bat. A bat? A bat? We're not going in there against a bat. No, it was the AR. But think about this. This person said he had enough time to do it with his hands. He thought a person is gonna go into a school and with their bare hands kill dozens of people. This is the insanity that we're up against, trying to save people's lives. And I'm also just gonna briefly mention that a judge has now blocked a law regulating which sorts of handguns can be sold in California. We'll see, it's gonna be appealed and all that. But this could have cascading effects that stop a lot of regulations on handguns. This is Cormac Carney, US District Court judge. He said it's unconstitutional, cannot be enforced. What does the law do? It requires that any new handgun has to have three components. A chamber load indicator, which shows whether the gun is loaded, seems like just a very reasonable thing to have to stop people from accidentally being killed. A magazine disconnect mechanism that will stop the gun from firing if the magazine is not properly inserted. And micro stamping capability so law enforcement can more easily link spent shell casings to the guns they were fired from. All either routine safety mechanisms or the ability to look into and investigate crimes. Nope, can't do it. Because no handgun, according to the judge, available in the world has all three of these features. These regulations are having a devastating impact on Californians' ability to acquire and use new state-of-the-art handguns. Well, hypothetically state-of-the-art. I mean, we could speculate that state-of-the-art could be handguns that are manufactured to stop people from needlessly being killed by them. But apparently, and this has been going on for years, apparently no gun manufacturer has been willing to make a gun that has these safety features. You can make guns incredibly safe if you want to. You can make guns almost impossible for a random person to steal and then kill someone with. But they're choosing not to, knowing that a judge is gonna have their back. And that's what we're seeing in this case. What has become of full self-driving technology? That technology that was supposed to be like the cornerstone of Tesla's tech dominance in the auto industry. It might seem like in recent years it's gotten worse, and that's because it has, but not randomly it's gotten worse. It got worse because of the decisions of one man, and what do you know? It's Elon Musk. So here's what happened. Back in 2021, this is May of 2021, Tesla announced that it was eliminating radar systems on new cars. And soon after that, they began disabling the radars of cars that already had them. So why do that? Because up until that point, the self-driving technology, which is not full self-driving, it's just branding. Everybody needs to understand that it's assisted driving, used a combination of cameras, sensors, and radar to try to drive in a safe fashion. Apparently, Musk decided that was no longer needed. The sleek bodies of the cars, they say, already bristled with 8 cameras designed to view the road and spot hazards. Musk said that should be enough. Now, notably, his engineers did not believe that that should be enough. They said that you need this radar. They believe that Teslas would be susceptible to basic perception errors if the cameras were obscured by raindrops or even just bright sunlight. One Tesla autopilot engineer who spoke on the condition of anonymity said, "I just knew that putting that software out in the streets would not be safe. You can't predict what the car is going to do." But the issue is that when it came down to the engineers saying one thing and Musk saying another, he regrettably is in charge. And so he overruled his engineers and they got rid of radar. They began disabling radar for the ones that already had it. And as a result of that, you started to immediately see more crashes, more near misses, and other embarrassing mistakes. So that probably leads to you wondering, why do this then? Well, apparently doing the radar going forward and all that is expensive. He wanted the cars to be cheaper. He didn't believe that it was necessary and he didn't care to hear from the people who had actual tech expertise in this area. I just wanna remind everyone, I understand that you have been trained for years to believe that Elon Musk is in like a big warehouse like Tony Stark, like welding things and coding. That doesn't happen. He's not an engineer. He doesn't understand how these things work. And that's fine. You don't need to do that to be a CEO. The issue is when you are overriding the legitimate safety concerns of actual engineers with training in this area. And that's what he did. And people have already lost their lives as a result of the accidents that we've seen with this technology. Yasmin, what do you think?
Yeah, Elon Musk is so lame. And I know that I'm just a peon who doesn't have billions of dollars. And I'm just a woman who isn't cool. So like, who am I to criticize someone like Elon Musk? But he has the dumbest sense of humor. And I bring this up because it's so dumb that it makes me not trust him. Like, I can't trust someone who still thinks that 69 and 420 are funny. And I don't trust or understand the way his mind works. And maybe that's because I'm not a genius like he is. Maybe that's possible, right? But it seems like his priorities are skewed. And it seems like his ego drives a lot of his quote unquote innovation and a lot of his quote unquote disruption of industries, right? But ultimately, it's unsafe. This is why we can't be relying on these billionaires to fix all of our problems. I think back in the day, Elon was looked at like kind of a hero for a brief period in time because he was like a younger guy and he wasn't like, you know, like Bill Gates or any of these other old, you know, wonky billionaires. Mm-hmm. And the idea, I think the perception was that he was more in tune with the average American and that he was apparently into science and he wasn't, you know, backing, you know, any kind of religious fanaticism or whatever. But that facade only lasted for so long. It didn't take long for people to understand that billionaires are not normal. They never are normal. They're not geniuses. They are exploitative. That's what he is.
Yeah, no, 100%. Deeply weird. I would argue that we liked him before we knew what he was actually like and the effects of his disastrous decisions.
Before you get to know someone, it's not always
exactly.
Good.
Yeah, pulling people off of Tesla to go work for Twitter or whatever is probably not going to help when you're facing these major issues, which are being investigated, by the way, by the DOJ. No, 100% they don't. It's important technology. Somebody hopefully will figure it out. But at this point, I don't know why anyone would have any faith that his company is going to be the one that does it. And by the way, he's described full self-driving as, quote, the difference between Tesla being worth a lot of money and being worth basically zero. So one would think you would then err on the side of safety, but he decided to go in a different direction. And unfortunately, very often so do Teslas. Anyway, that's all the time we have for the first hour of the show. There's a lot coming up in the aftermath, though, so please join us for that. Thank you to everybody watching the linear platforms, listening on the podcast. We will see the rest of you in just a few.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.